Do you know what it takes to set up a business selling crickets to be ground into flour in the state of Utah? Or one that sells cat litter made from tofu in Hawaii? Yeah, me either. But someone does, and that someone is today's sponsor, Northwest Registered Agent. They can answer all your questions, from what licenses you need to turn bugs into food, or how to set up an LLC for your yarn dyeing business. Whatever weird, wonderful, slightly unhinged thing you're trying to sell, these are your people. Northwest Registered Agent has been helping small business owners and entrepreneurs launch and grow businesses for nearly 30 years. They are the largest registered agent and LLC service in the United States, with over 1,500 corporate guides, real people who know your local laws and can help you and your business every step of the way. Don't pay hundreds or thousands of dollars for what you can get from Northwest for free. Visit northwestregisteredagent.com/happensfree and start using free resources to build something amazing. Get more with Northwest Registered Agent at northwestregisteredagent.com/happensfree.
Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Mark and Jamal's romantic weekend will depart in 4 minutes from Platform 6. Your ride comes with a rolling countryside sunset view and a table seat ideal for playing footsie beneath. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Everyone, welcome to another snack size edition of our show, How Success Happens. I'm Dan Bova, writer and editor at entrepreneur.com. So more than a decade ago, David Rogier co-founded Masterclass. And since then, the platform has sat down with more than 200 of the world's top performers, from Serena Williams to Mark Cuban to Martin Scorsese, to capture how they think and work. So today, David is going to share some of the habits, mindsets, and decision-making frameworks that are common among these top performers, as well as break down some of the biggest myths that people get wrong about success. So welcome, David.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
It's an honor to have you. And I don't have to describe what Masterclass is because everybody knows what Masterclass is. So let's get into it. You've heard from a lot of people, a lot of top performers, as we said. What are some of the common threads that you see in some of these top performers?
We have sat across from, as you said, at least 200 of the best in the world, from Steph Curry to Richard Branson to Martha Stewart. Here are some of the more, I think, surprising things that I learned from them. One of the most surprising things I learned from them is that the best in the world are just not chill. I assume that if you're as good as a Christina Aguilera, as a Serena Williams, as Steph Curry, that once you reach that level of mastery and fame, that you just chill. You do what you want, you appear when you want to, and that's it. But from the very first shoot that we've done, and it's been the same on all of them, every time that we cut, the instructor pauses and wants notes on how they are doing. Once a class is in testing, they all want to see all the test results, what parts people loved, what parts people did not like. Once a class is live, almost every instructor has sent somebody on our team a note saying, you know what, I really need to update this part here. And it really made me think, if they're so obsessed with improving and getting input on their craft at this stage, then what am I doing? I have no excuse. And I think that really changed my approach from something I think when I started out, there was an insecurity to ask how I'm doing, to now I ask it all the time. And what you learn is you don't always have to take that input, but it's really helpful to know how somebody responds to it. So that is one thing I've been really surprised, and that really, I think, changed how I approach things. The second thing I learned was from Richard Branson. Richard Branson has this approach that if you have a problem, you make it a bigger problem. Okay, I don't know about you all, that never crossed my mind to do. So the example he gives of this is, this was now a long time ago. He wanted to put a television on the back of every seat in an airplane. And he goes, this is how people want to fly. If I do that, I'm going to increase how many people come on my flights. I'm going to increase how much they enjoy the flight. So I want to put a TV screen on the back of every chair. He goes to his lender and asks, I think he needed about $10 million of this. And the lender goes, no. And Richard's like, no, trust me, this is going to work. And they're like, no, it's not. We aren't giving you $10 million. Why people want to travel is just to get to from place A to place B. So we aren't doing it. So he's trying to think this through. How can I solve this? How can I get a TV on the back of every seat? And he says, it was 3 a.m. in the morning, and he's in bed, and all of a sudden he jumps up, and he realized he needed to make this a bigger problem. So he calls his sales rep at Boeing, and he goes, look, I want to upgrade my fleet. I'm thinking of buying over 25 planes, but I need one small thing. Now think about this. If I'm a sales rep and somebody just called me for a 25 plane order, I am ecstatic. I've reached every goal I had for the entire year. So the sales reps, of course, anything you want. And Richard's like, I need a TV screen on every seat back. And this guy was like, okay, yeah, fine, deal. And so what Richard learned from that is sometimes if you scale up how big the problem is, different solves appear. And so that's one thing I think about when I'm stuck. How can I make this a bigger thing to find an easier solve? Third thing I learned, and this was from Issa Rae and Kim Kardashian, is to build your own focus group. They both intentionally assemble in WhatsApp and text message groups of people to get their input on product decisions. They're both very strategic about this. Kim and Issa both make sure that the people that they ask aren't just like them, because they don't want just somebody who says the exact same thing as them. They also make sure that the people are people who aren't afraid to give you their honest opinion. And they're also very crafty on how they ask. So Issa Rae has a good example of this, where Issa Rae doesn't say, hey, this is a new idea I have for a show. Can you tell me what you think about it? She'll pick a show that's adjacent to a new show that she's thinking of and ask them, are they watching it? What do they think of it? Because she knows if I say, hey, I have this idea that I'm really excited by, anybody that you know, your friends, are going to be like, yeah, it's great. The other one who does this or has a tactical approach to this is the author James Patterson. James Patterson says, if you want to test if your book idea is good, remember, James has written 100 bestsellers. He goes, you tell a friend the premise of the book, but you don't ask them for what they think. You wait to see if they ask you, then what happens next? Because he wants to know if it's so compelling to you, right? If you say, this book is about a man that had a frog, friends will be like, oh, cool. Because they might say, oh, that's a cool idea. But if you go, this book is about a man that found a frog and the frog was actually a genius. If the person responds, oh, cool, that's not good. If they respond, wait, and so what happens? Then he's, now I'm onto something. Number four, I've learned this from almost all the instructors, is you're never too big to ask lots of questions. I can give you an example. I'm on the first call I think I ever had with Martha Stewart. How Martha starts the call is with a barrage of questions about our business. How many subscribers do we have? What is our retention rates? When are we seeing spikes? She was asking because she wanted to know. She was interested in this. Every single one of our instructors always ask 1,000 questions. What's so fascinating about this is that's not what you expect. You expect we are the ones asking all the questions, and we ask tons of questions, but they ask all of them. I think this rule came, I think this is right, from Angela Merkel, who basically says, I'll ask anybody 5 questions because I think everybody's at least got 5 answers that are really interesting. After that, I expect them to ask me a question back, and if they don't, I stop talking to that person. And I think, I don't know how many of you feel this way. There's so many times I've been out with places, I'll ask tons of questions and the person never asks me a question back. And it's not an ego thing. It's like, how are you not interested in the world? So I think my lesson number four is, you're never way too big to ask questions. There's somebody, everybody has something interesting to say and something for you to learn from. Number five is from Chris Voss, that negotiation is not a trade-off. Negotiation is about finding an outcome that is good for everyone. So Chris Voss was the lead FBI hostage negotiator. Chris Voss will say when he's doing a negotiation, let's say at a bank, he's, look, I'm trying to make sure that person leaves safely. That person wants to get out safe. And so this isn't about me trying to squeeze them. It's saying, how can I give them what that person needs and wants? It's not going to be everything that they need to want because I can't give them everything they want, but I can give them what they need to want and I get what I want too. And I think that totally changes it, because then what happens is all of a sudden you start asking questions. This just goes back to our other rules. You start going back and asking questions to figure out what is it that person actually wants. An example of this in the Walt Disney negotiation with Pixar. What came across was Steve Jobs wasn't just interested in the outcome. Steve Jobs wanted to know what's going to happen to Pixar. Is it going to be an independent company? Is it going to be still be able to choose what films it works on? That, from the Walt Disney side, was an easy give to give, because the reason why they were buying Pixar is so that Pixar keeps doing what it does. So if they can figure that out from Steve by asking them, then half the negotiation is done. So it was really rethinking what I think of negotiation to make sure that it's not about trying to extract from another person. It's trying to find a solve for both of us. Number six. In Christina Aguilera's class and in Lewis Hamilton's class, they both talk about something I didn't expect. I think oftentimes, especially when we're deep in the weeds on something or we're building a project, we often think if we finish, we have won. They both said that to them isn't success. Success isn't a finish line. It is hurdles. It's about clearing multiple ones over and over again on a never-ending loop. And when they said that, that really hit hard with me. Because if you look at the people that we really look up to in the world, who are really the best in the world, they didn't just have one hit and then stop, or win one championship and stop. These are people that kept trying to get better, to achieve the next hard thing. And that changes it, because then it also doesn't let you get in your own way on the ego of, I just sold this big person, so now I'm the best, and now I don't have to work anymore. No, you have to get a larger one and have that over a period of time. And so changing how I think about what it is to actually win. Number seven, I think there's this myth in entrepreneurship that like emotions cloud your judgment. Some of our instructors have shown me that emotion can be very good as a motivator. So the one that comes to mind most is for me is Bobbi Brown. She sold her first firm that she built to Estee Lauder. That was a really big win. But she wanted to go again, and they locked her up in a very long-term non-compete. So what did she do? She got a charm engraved with the date her non-compete ends and wore that charm for over a decade. And the day it ended, or the next day, she started her next brand and it's been a huge success. I think about this a lot. There are things I'm sure we all feel that really we are angry about. Somebody underestimated us, some outcome, and you can use that as fuel. I don't think you want to use it to take over everything, because that is not a good way to live life. But if you use it in concrete ways, I think it can really help. Number eight is so important. I had this myth that if I work hard, people will see that I do good work and everything else is going to be good. Wrong. Professor Jeff Pfeffer in his class talks about this a lot. This is a dangerous myth. Because what you end up doing is not working on the skill sets that you need to. The skill set of being successful is not just doing great work, but it's also knowing how to influence. It's knowing how to sell. It's knowing how to present in front of a room of folks. And if you've ever been at work and see everyone else around you get a raise and you haven't, or a promotion you haven't, and you're like, wait, I do much better work than them. It's probably true, but they have figured out how to sell themselves. And I think that's one of the most underrated and important skills. When you then start to click into that, you figure out the next thing. You think about, your boss doesn't decide if you get a promotion or raise. It's your boss's boss. And what does your boss's boss care about? They care about them getting a raise. So they want to look good. So your job in most jobs, and this is sad, but I think it's true, is not to do great work. It's to make your boss's boss look good and know that it was you that made them look good. Number nine, one of the most popular professors at Stanford Business School was Maggie Neal. She taught a negotiation class that everybody would try to get into. One of the things that she says is the most important negotiation is you don't negotiate over every term at the same time. You take the terms and you put them into bundles. Each bundle has one term that's easy for the other person to give on, has one thing that's easy for you to give on, and then one hard issue. The idea of that is, one, they're going to see you as a reasonable person because you gave something that they cared about. You're going to probably feel pretty good because they gave you something that was easy for them to give, but you care about. And then that sets you up to win and be successful on the larger thing, because now you feel like the other person is trying to actually help you. And you can do this five, if there's five big terms, you create five bundles. I thought that was a really interesting way to organize a negotiation, because I think most people, if you do this right, are looking for a way to say yes. 10th thing I've learned is I went up to Bob Sutton, who is the author of the book, The No Asshole Rule. And I think lots of us have either read that book or have discussed applying it to work, which basically says at your job, you're not gonna have any assholes. I went to Bob and said, ask Bob, if you manage a team now that's half actual folks like us and half agents, does the No Asshole Rule still apply? Because when I interact with Claude or ChatGPT, I feel like it wants me to say exactly how it is. So is this rule still apply? And Bob said, look, it's still being researched. There's still tons of work, but absolutely it does. Because if you're mean and rude to an AI agent, it's going to be mean to the other AI agents. It's going to be mean to other people it interacts with. And that's going to create the bad environment you want. So you actually not only want to be nice to it, you also want to make sure that your team is being nice to it. I think one of the most interesting things and things I'm most excited by in some of the new classes we have is that you've got to learn the rules of business in the AI world. And this is just the beginning of those rules.
Don't be an asshole to ChatGPT. I think that is great advice, because AI is coming to rule the world and you want to be known to the robots as one of the nice human beings. Then they'll take care of you. Thanks to David for breaking that all down. I definitely implore you all, if you haven't checked out Masterclass in a while or never have, definitely check it out. They've got an incredible array of new instructors. Everything from business to the arts to, I don't know, there's a million things there. So go check it out. Thanks so much for listening, subscribing, sending emails. Speaking of emails, hey, let me know what is the best piece of advice you got from David that you really enjoyed. You can hit me up at howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com. Also, please subscribe to our newsletter, info.entrepreneur.com/HSH. That's it. I'm done telling you what to do with your life. If you want to be an asshole to ChatGPT, go ahead, roll the dice. Let me know how it works out for you.